absolutely amazing. The enemy has always been within, ladies and gentlemen. Always. Let me say this again. Harry Truman was a 33rd degree Freemason of the Southern jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite. And so was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Roosevelt began the plunge into socialism. Harry Truman took the ball and ran for the goal. And they're still running for the goal, and most Americans are still asleep, not even understanding what has happened to this country, and especially not understanding that the enemy is within. They keep looking out for someone. Saddam Hussein is no threat to the United States of America. Never has been, never could be in his wildest dreams. Communist China is no threat. They can't get their army here. They have no way to get here to take over. They can't do it. Japan could be an economic threat if we're stupid enough to let them. Russia? Well, Russia never was a threat, you see. The Cold War was planned, implemented, and carried out. From the talks between Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill at Yalta. That's what it was all about. They planned the division of the world. They planned the Cold War in order to develop the technology to rule the people of the world in the New World Order, which they have been hard at work bringing about. There was no fall of the Soviet Union. Nothing occurred from the bottom up. It was a top-down thing. The Soviet economy didn't fall. It didn't fail. It couldn't, because it was never floated on the international money market. The ruble was never floated, ladies and gentlemen. Its value was what they said it was. There were no Soviet citizens starving. There were in the early days of the formation of the Soviet Union, but never since. This has all been orchestrated. And folks, that's not my opinion. I'm not yanking that out of the cold blue sky and throwing it in your face. I have proven it over and over and over again. Just as I am proving to you tonight the conspiracy to bring about world government over the ashes of this nation. And you'd better wake up to that fact. You'd better admit it. And you'd better get busy to do something about it. Because if you don't, your history, if they allow you to be in the history books as ever having existed at all. Remember, the victor always writes history. 1955, the Honorable Lawrence H. Smith in the Congressional Record, May 4th, 1955, page 3018, said this, quote, "Another pitfall of the world government advocates is the outrageous notion that security is the birthright of every individual. The only security that government is bound to guarantee its citizens is security in their freedom to provide for their own security. If a person is relieved of the duties, obligations, and anxieties necessary for the maintenance of his material welfare, he is also relieved of his dignity as an individual and becomes dependent." End quote. 1955. Dr. B. Orville Watts. In his book, The United Nations Planned Tyranny, New York, Devon, Adair, 1955, page 108, said this, quote, "At Fort MacArthur, California, and in other centers, considerable numbers of American military forces went into training in 1951 as military government reserve units. What they were for may appear from their practice maneuvers during the 2 years 1951 to 1952. Their first sally took place on July 31st, 1951, when they simulated an invasion and seizure of 9 California cities, Compton, Culver City, Inglewood, Hawthorne, Huntington Park, Long Beach, Redondo Beach, Southgate, and Torrance. The invading forces, however, did not fly the American flag. They came in under the flag of the United Nations, and their officers stated that they represented the United Nations. These forces arrested the mayors and police chiefs, and pictures later appeared in the newspapers showing these men in jail. The officers issued manifestos reading, quote, "By virtue of the authority vested in me by the United Nations Security Council, quote, end quote. At Huntington Park, they held a flag-raising ceremony, taking down the American flag and running up in its place the United Nations banner. On April 3, 1952, other units did the same thing at Lampasas, Texas. They took over the town, closed churches, strutted their authority over the teachers, and posted guards in classrooms, set up concentration camps, and interned businessmen after holding brief one-sided trials without habeas corpus. Said a newspaper reporter that Texas invasion, but the staged action almost became actual drama when one student and two troopers forgot it was only make-believe. "Ain't nobody going to make me get up," cried John Snell, 17, his face beet red. One of the paratroopers shoved the butt of his rifle within inches of Snell's face and snarled, "You want this butt placed in your teeth? Get up." The invaders put up posters listing many offenses for which citizens would be punished. One of them read, 25 publishing or circulating or having in his possession with intent to publish or circulate any printed or written matter hostile, detrimental, or disrespectful to the government of any other of the United Nations. Think back to the freedom of speech clause of the United States Constitution, which every American officer and official is sworn to support and defend. What was in the minds of those who prepared, approved, and posted these UN proclamations? The third practice seizure under the United Nations flag occurred at Watertown, New York, August 20, 1952, more than a year later than the first ones. It followed the same pattern set in the earlier seizures in California and Texas. Is this a foretaste of world government which so many Americans seem to want? End quote. It was a test, ladies and gentlemen, to see if Americans would object, if they would resist the takeovers, if they would take up arms against the invaders. They did not. And they are not doing it today in the same exact exercises that have been held all over this country for the last several years, in some instances duplicating exactly what you just heard. In 1935, G. Edward Griffin, in The Fearful Master, A Second Look at the United Nations, Appleton, Wisconsin, Western Islands, 1964, page 120, said this, top Communist Party member Joseph Z. Kornfeder revealed in 1955, quote, from the point of view of its master designers meeting at Dumbarton Oaks and Bretton Woods, and which included such masterful agents as Alger Hiss, Harry Dexter White, Lachlan Curry, and others, the United Nations was and is not a failure. They and the Kremlin masterminds behind them never intended the United Nations as a peacekeeping organization. What they had in mind was a fancy and colossal Trojan horse, under the wings of which their smaller agencies could move more effectively and operate. And in that, they succeeded even beyond their expectations. It's the United Nations internal setup, communist designed. It is a pattern for sociological conquest, a pattern aimed to serve the purpose of communist penetration of the West. It is ingenious and deceptive, end quote. M. Stanton Evans wrote in The Politics of Surrender, Devon, Adair, New York, 1966, page 26, quote, Nikita Khrushchev said, our firm conviction is that sooner or later, capitalism will give way to socialism. Whether you like it or not, history is on our side. We will bury you. End quote. And in 1958, as quoting a character called the Grand Inquisitor in one of Fyodor Mikhailovich Dostoevsky's parables, as saying, Aldous Huxley, in his book, The Brave New World Revisited, New York Bantam Books, 1938, page 115, said this, quote, in the end, they, the people, will lay their freedom at our, the controller's feet, and say to us, make us your slaves, but feed us, end quote. In 1958, Aldous Huxley, in Brave New World Revisited, New York, Bantam Books, 1958, page 116, said this, quote, The older dictators fell because they could never supply their subjects with enough bread, enough circuses, enough miracles, and mysteries. Under a scientific dictatorship, education will really work, with the result that most men and women will grow up to love their servitude and will never dream of revolution. There seems to be no good reason why a thoroughly scientific dictatorship should ever be overthrown. End quote. Remember in the quote before? Enough circuses, enough miracles, and enough mysteries, and enough bread. Well, they've got enough circuses now, Super Bowls, tournaments of every kind that you can dream of every single day. Enough miracles, oh yes, happening everywhere. Miracles in various forms all the time. And mysteries, UFOs and Bigfoots and goat suckers and Art Bells. Oh yes. You poor suckers, they've got you hooked and you don't even know it. You're not even fighting. They're just dragging you up on the beach to die in the sun. Most of you think the Washington Monument is really a monument to George Washington. But it has nothing to do with George Washington. It is the symbol of the object of worship of the hidden mystery religion of ancient Babylon. The phallus, the penis of Osiris. Ra, the ray of the sun, the generative force. The lost word of Freemasonry. The shaft. And I've actually had radio stations tell me that they wouldn't air this broadcast because I talk this way. You see, they're not interested in knowing the truth or in imparting the truth to the American people. They're hypocrites and frauds. They do not teach what Jesus taught. And they think that Jesus had something against the word bullshit. If you read your Bible, you'll find that Jesus cursed the fig tree. Cursed the fig tree. Jesus cursed the fig tree. And there's much, much more. Christians don't even know anything about Christianity or the object of their veneration. It's a shame. It is a shame. And we're having severe thunderstorms outside now, folks. And I don't know how long we'll be able to remain on the air, because usually when we have thunderstorms, we have power outages. It is a normal thing in rural areas to have power outages during thunderstorms. So because of that, I'm going to stop giving this outstanding, outrageous, and absolutely truthful information to you. And take phone calls and see what you have to think about what you've just heard. And there are many, many pages more to go. I'll continue with it tomorrow night. So the number is 520-333-4578. We'll take your calls right now, folks. So you can start hitting your redial button, and we'll see what you've got to say about all this. Good evening. You're on the air.
I can't believe I am. Okay, there's something you said that never, ever had anyone be able to back up. And you said it, and so I'm going to challenge you on it.
I didn't say it. I quoted it, and I gave you the source. Now you go look up the source. That's why I give sources. That's why I document things, so that you can go find it.
The item I'm pointing to is that treaties have superiority to it.
I didn't say that they did. I read to you a quote from the Congressional Record. I told you who said it. I told you exactly which Congressional Record and the page.
All right, I'd like to make a point.
You can make a point, but don't tell me I said something that I didn't.
Well, when one says say, one says say.
Hey, good night. You're a sheeple. You are absolutely stupid. I read you a quote. I gave you the source of the quote and the document and the page number. I know that treaties do not supersede the Constitution. But if the people in government believe that treaties supersede the Constitution, you ignorant sheeple, then you're going to be affected by it. And if you don't get your head out of your behind, you're going to be buried by it. And if you don't understand what I'm trying to do here, then you don't even need to be listening to this broadcast. You haven't got the brains. Good evening. You're on the air.
Well, good evening. Okay. Now, the point I want to make is that...
Goodbye. And don't call back again until you get your head out of the orifice to which I have previously referred. Listen to me carefully. You haven't got the brains to be on this broadcast. You haven't even got the brains to be listening to this broadcast. And until you find those brains, don't call this broadcast. In fact, I suggest you turn off your radio and go to bed. Good evening. You're on the air.
Are you afraid of...
There he is again. Well, I guess we got poopy diapers number two. No, I'm not afraid of anything. I cannot argue with people who do not have an argument. I cannot even talk to somebody like you who doesn't even know what you're talking about. Now go back, get a tape, and listen to your earlier conversation, and you'll see exactly what I'm referring to. You're too dumb for the hour of the time. You're too stupid to be listening to this broadcast. You heard me make a quote. You heard me give the reference, you heard me give the document, and the page number, and you still insisted that I'm the one who was saying it. You don't even understand the purpose of why I read you the quote. People in government, in Congress, believe that treaties supersede the Constitution. And when they believe it, and they're making the laws, and they're making the treaties, and they're putting us in a world government, subverting this government every day, destroying our rights, and the document that protects our rights, it doesn't matter what you think. Until you're ready to draw a line and say no more. And my friend, you haven't done that yet. Instead, you want to call up people like me who are trying to help you and try to destroy what we're doing. And you're not going to do that with me. You might succeed with some of the rumor mongers and people who don't know what they're talking about, but you will not succeed in that effort with William Cooper on the Hour of the Time ever, not in your wildest dreams. Now, there's some pretty intelligent people out there who know what they're talking about, who understand what we're about and what we're doing, who understand why I just spent an hour and 20 minutes reading quotes to you, something that you probably haven't grasped yet. Out of the tremendous implications of what I just gave you, you want to call up and nitpick with me and claim that I said something and argue with me about it, and I never said it. And would never say it. And I know it's not true. The people in government believe it to be true. Bob Dole believes it to be true. Bill Clinton believes it to be true. And they act upon it every day. They are controlling the progress and the direction that this nation is taking. And because you're so stupid, you don't even understand what's going on, you're allowing them to get away with it. It's easy for them to do it because you haven't got a brain in your head. That amazes me. How so many Americans have lived for so long in a state of total, absolute ignorance, apathy, and stupidity. It just amazes me that we're not all slaves already. How in the world have you survived this long by that kind of idiot attitude? And I sincerely hope that you're insulted to your core, because maybe you'll go in the bathroom, look in the mirror, and decide not to be so stupid anymore. President Clinton's out to get me, buddy. You ain't dip in line. In fact, you don't even know where the line starts. So you don't even have a chance to cry. Ain't happening. Besides that, you've got to have at least a semblance of a brain to be able to tilt at this windmill. So since that seems to be the quality of the calls, and seems that this poor little insignificant, insecure jerk has got to keep hitting the redial, then we'll just go back, and if we lose the power and you don't hear all of this, you'll have to get it some other way. Those of you who don't understand what I'm doing, turn off your radio and go to bed. We're down to the wire. This country is almost under the water. It's almost taking its last gasp. There isn't much left. I don't have time to mess with you. If you understand what this is all about, fine, listen. If I open the phones and you want to call in and talk intelligently. Don't be a dumb, ignoramus, sheeple, stupid jerk. Because I won't put up with it for 1 second. Not 1 second. If you start out that way and I try to reason with you and tell you where you're wrong, and you persist like that last idiot did, the same thing will happen. You're just gone, off the air. I do not have the patience for it. Lost it a long time ago. That's why we're in this position. There's too many ignorant idiots like that last caller in this country and in the world. That's what's wrong. That is what's wrong, ladies and gentlemen. In a book, En Route to Global Occupation, Gary H. Kaa, author, Huntington House Publishers, Lafayette, Louisiana, 1992, page 33, and Gary Allen also, in Who They Are, The Conspiracy to Destroy America, American Opinion, October 1972, on page 65, wrote this about 1959. And in study number 7, a Council on Foreign Relations position paper, published on 25th November 1959, the CFR states that its purpose was to advocate the building of a new international order, which may be responsible to world aspirations for peace and for social and economic change, and international order, including states labeling themselves as socialist or communist, end quote. Gary Allen, in None Dare Call It Conspiracy, Concord Press, Rosemore, California, 1971, page 51, wrote this. 1960, Congressman Wright Patman, former chairman of the House Banking Committee, said, quote, in the United States today, we have in effect two governments. We have the duly constituted government, then we have an independent, uncontrolled, and uncoordinated government in the Federal Reserve System operating the money powers which are reserved to Congress by the Constitution, end quote. Walt Whitman Rostow, in The United States in the World Arena, New York, Harper and Brothers, 1960, page 549, wrote this about 1960. Walt Whitman Rostow, Council on Foreign Relations, Chairman of the State Department's Policy Planning Board, and the President's National Security Advisor, said, quote, it is a legitimate American national objective to see removed from all nations, including the United States, the right of use substantial military, the right to use substantial military force to pursue their own interest. Since this residual right is the root of national sovereignty and the basis for the existence of an international arena of power, it is, therefore, an American interest to see an end to nationhood as it has been historically defined, end quote. Edith Kermit Roosevelt, in the Indianapolis News, December 23, 1961, she's the granddaughter of President Teddy Roosevelt, and James Perloff, in The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations and the American Decline, Appleton, Wisconsin, Western Islands, 1988, page 14, said, and I quote, 1961, the best way to fight communism is by a one-world socialist state governed by experts like themselves. The result has been policies which favor gradual surrender of United States sovereignty to the United Nations, end quote. That's a direct quote by Edith Kermit Roosevelt. 1961, the first stage would significantly reduce the capabilities of nations to wage war by reducing the armed forces of the nations. Two, the nuclear capabilities would be reduced by treaties. And three, United Nations peacekeeping powers would be strengthened. The second stage would provide further substantial reductions in the armed forces and the establishment of a permanent international peace force within the United Nations. The third stage would have the nations retaining only those forces required for maintaining internal order, but the United States would provide manpower for the United Nations peace force, end quote. Now, you see, all that came true, ladies and gentlemen. That was published in 1961 in State Department Publication 7277, entitled Freedom from War. In Congress and the Nation, a review of government and politics in the post-war years, Congressional Quarterly Service, Washington, D.C., 1965, page 153. 1961, September 25th, President Kennedy presented to the United Nations a new United States plan for general and complete disarmament, which called upon negotiating states to seek the widest possible area of agreement at the earliest possible date, and to continue their efforts without interruption until the whole program has been achieved. In 1961, Lincoln P. Bloomfield, in A World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations, the Institute for Defense Analysis, March 10, 1962, prepared for the IDA to Department of State on February 24, 1961, under contract number SCC-28270, said this, quote, "A world effectively controlled by the United Nations is one in which world government would come about through the establishment of supranational institutions characterized by mandatory universal membership and some ability to employ physical force. Effective control would thus entail a preponderance of political power in the hands of a supranational organization. The present United Nations Charter could theoretically be revised in order to erect such an organization equal to the task envisaged, thereby codifying a radical rearrangement of power in the world. World means that the system is global, with no exceptions to its fiat. Universal membership, effectively controlled, connotes a relative monopoly of physical force at the center of the system, and thus a preponderance of political power in the hands of a supranational organization. United Nations is not necessarily precisely the organization as it now exists. Finally, to avoid endless euphemism and evasive verbiage, the contemplated regime will occasionally be referred to unblushingly as a world government." The Los Angeles Times on March 3, 1962, on the front page said this, quote, "The United States will submit to the Geneva Disarmament Conference a plan for elimination of national armies within 9 years and their replacement by a United Nations force," reliable sources said Friday. The American plan was said to include these precautions as well as a United Nations peace force to maintain international law and order as national defenses are torn down. Dan Smoot in The Invisible Government and the Dan Smoot Report, Incorporated, Dallas, Texas, 1962, on page 105, said this, quote, "The fact is that every step the United States takes toward political and economic entanglements with the rest of the world is a step toward realization of the end objective of communism, creating a one-world socialist political and economic system in which we will be one of the subjugated provinces." Dan Smoot, also in The Invisible Government, the Dan Smoot Report, Incorporated, Dallas, Texas, 1962, on page 117, said this, quote, "The world peace aspects of the United Nations were emphasized to enlist support of the American public. Few Americans noticed that the United Nations Charter really creates a worldwide social, cultural, economic, educational, and political alliance, and commits each member nation to a program of total socialism for itself and to the support of total socialism for all other nations. Nelson A. Rockefeller, In the Future of Federalism, The Godkin Lectures at Harvard University, 1962, Cambridge, Harvard University Press, 1964, on page 64, said this, quote, Rockefeller warned against the fever of nationalism and declared that the nation-state is becoming less and less competent to perform its international political tasks. All these, then, are some of the reasons, economic, military, political, pressing us to lead vigorously toward the true building of a new world order. More specifically, I hope and urge there will evolve the basis for a federal structure of the free world. And, oh boy, the Honorable A.S. Herlong, Jr. of Florida in H.R., Congressional Records Appendix, January the 10th, 1963, pages A, 34, and 35. It says this, and I quote, Current Communist Goals. One. And I caught the leader there, so I'll start this over again. 1963, Current Communist Goals. One. United States acceptance of coexistence as the only alternative to atomic war. 2. United States willingness to capitulate in preference to engaging in atomic war. 3. Develop the illusion that total disarmament by the United States would be a demonstration of moral strength. 4. Permit free trade between all nations, regardless of communist affiliation and regardless of whether or not items could be used for war. 5. Extension of long-term loans to Russia and Soviet satellites. 6. Provide American aid to all nations regardless of communist domination. 7. Grant recognition of Red China, admission of Red China to the United Nations. 10. Allow all Soviet satellites individual representation in the United Nations. 11. Promote the United Nations as the only hope for mankind. If its charter is rewritten, demand that it be set up as a one-world government with its own independent armed forces. And for some reason, it skips to 16. I don't know where the rest of them went. 16. Use technical decisions of the courts to weaken basic American institutions by claiming their activities violate civil rights. 17. Get control of the schools. Use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda. Soften the curriculum. Get control of teachers' associations. Put the party line in textbooks. 18. Gain control of all students' newspapers. 19. Use student riots to foment public protests against programs or organizations which are under communist attack. 20. Infiltrate the press. 21. Gain control of key positions in radio, television, and motion pictures. 22. Continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. An American communist cell was told to, quote, eliminate all good sculpture from parks and buildings, substitute shapeless, awkward, and meaningless forms, end quote. 23. Control art critics and directors of art museums. Our plan is to promote ugliness, repulsive, meaningless art. And 24. Eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and free press. 25. Break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio, and television. 26. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. 27. Infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. Discredit the Bible and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity which does not need a religious crutch. 28.
eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the ground that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. 29. Discredit the American Constitution by calling it inadequate, old-fashioned, out of step with modern needs, a hindrance to cooperation between nations on a worldwide basis. Gee, that's almost word for word exactly what Ross Perot said in his first bid for the presidency before he quit. Number 30. Discredit the American founding fathers. Present them as selfish aristocrats who had no concern for the common man. 32. Support any socialist movement to give centralized control over any part of the cultural education, social agencies, welfare programs, mental health clinics, etc. 38. Transfer some of the powers of arrest from the police to social agencies. Treat all behavioral problems as psychiatric disorders, which no one but psychiatrists can understand or treat. 39. Dominate the psychiatric profession and use mental health laws as a means of gaining coercive control over those who oppose communist goals. 40. Discredit the family as an institution. Encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. Remember, that was printed in the Congressional Records Appendix, January the 10th, 1963. Almost everything there since has come true. You're beginning to understand, those of you who are smart enough to understand, and I know that most of you are, that caller was a minority. I don't know where it came from, but it sure doesn't belong here. 1964, John Stormer, in None Dare Call It Treason, Florissant, Missouri, Liberty Bell Press, 1964, page 9, said, and I quote, 1964, Nikita Khrushchev, the United States will eventually fly the communist red flag. The American people will hoist it themselves, end quote. In Congress and the Nation, a review of government and politics in the post-war years, Congressional Quarterly Service, Washington, D.C., 1965, page 256, quote, unification of the Army, Navy, and Air Force under a single chief of staff advanced repeatedly after 1945 as the avenue to a stronger and more efficient military establishment. Never won the support of Congress. Direction and control of the armed services became increasingly centralized, end quote. In Congress and the Nation, a review of government and politics in the post-war years, Congressional Quarterly Service, Washington, D.C., 1965, page 561. I quote, federal authority over broadcasting was consolidated in the Communications Act of 1934, which gave to the 7-member Federal Communications Commission the job of regulating interstate and foreign commerce and communication by wire and radio, so as to make available, so far as possible, to all people of the United States, a communication service with adequate facilities at reasonable charges. The law subjects the operations and operators in broadcasting stations to assign frequencies and regulate their usage and to revoke or modify licenses. Now, let me explain to you something, folks, so that you'll understand what this means. Gave the FCC the job of, quote, regulating interstate and foreign commerce in communication. Now, do you know what that means? That means if you're not broadcasting across an international boundary or border or across a state line, but instead, if you are a intrastate broadcaster, they have no authority over you whatsoever. Arthur M. Schlesinger wrote in A Thousand Days, Boston, Houghton Mifflin, 1965, page 78, quote, the New York financial and legal community, that arsenal of talent which had so long furnished a steady supply to Democratic as well as Republican administrations, this community was the heart of the American establishment Its front organizations are the Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie Foundations, and the Council on Foreign Relations, its organs, the New York Times, and the publication Foreign Affairs. W. Cleon Skousen wrote in The Naked Capitalist, Salt Lake City, self-published 1970. Also, William T. Still wrote the same thing in his book, The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, Lafayette, Louisiana, Huntington House Publishers, 1990, page 163. 1970, while the Rothschilds and certain other Jewish families cooperated together in these ventures, this was by no means a Jewish monopoly, as some have alleged. Neither was it a Jewish conspiracy. As we shall see, men of finance of many nationalities and many religious or non-religious backgrounds collaborated together to create the superstructure of economic and political power. End quote. It's exactly what I've been telling you for years, ladies and gentlemen. Zbigniew Brzezinski, in his book Between Two Ages, Penguin Books, New York, 1970, page 274, wrote, 1970, quote, "The fiction of national sovereignty is clearly no longer compatible with reality. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen and maintain up-to-date files containing even the most personal information about the citizen. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities." End quote. Zbigniew Brzezinski was the national security advisor to President Jimmy Carter. Zbigniew Brzezinski, also in his book Between Two Ages, Penguin Books, New York, 1970, page 252, wrote, quote, "The gradual appearance of a more controlled and directed society, such a society would be dominated by an elite whose claim to political power would rest on allegedly superior scientific know-how, unhindered by the restraints of traditional liberal values. This elite would not hesitate to achieve its political ends by the latest modern techniques for influencing public behavior and keeping society under close surveillance and control." End quote. Zbigniew Brzezinski also said in his book Between Two Ages, Penguin Books, New York, 1970, page 296, and I quote, "Movement toward a larger community of the developed nations cannot be achieved by fusing existing state into one larger entity. It makes much more sense to attempt to associate existing states through a variety of indirect ties and already developing limitations on national sovereignty. Movement toward such a community will in all probability require two broad and overlapping phases. The first of these would involve the forging of community links among the United States, Western Europe, and Japan. That is known, ladies and gentlemen, because it was done 2 years later as the Trilateral Commission." You see, you better pay attention to these people. They know what they're talking about. Zbigniew Brzezinski, also in Between Two Ages, Penguin Books, New York, 1970, page 304, said, quote, "It might also eventually lead to the possibility of something along the lines of a global taxation system," end quote. He also said in the same book on page 308, quote, "Though the objective of shaping a community of the developed nations is less ambitious than the goal of world government, it is more attainable," end quote. In the Los Angeles Times, April 7, 1970, quoted by Robert W. Lee, "The United Nations Conspiracy, Appleton, Wisconsin, Western Islands, 1981, pages 26 through 27. Uthant, the Burmese Marxist and the Secretary General of the United Nations, said, quote, "Lenin was a man with a mind of great clarity and incisiveness, and his ideas have had a profound influence on the course of contemporary history. Lenin's ideals of peace and peaceful coexistence among states have won widespread international acceptance, and they are in line with the aims of the United Nations Charter," end quote. Honorable A.S. Herlong, Jr. of Florida, in H.R., Congressional Records, Appendix, January 10, 1963, pages A34 and 35, said, quote, "If one understands that socialism is not a share-the-wealth program, but is a system which no one but a psychiatrist can... If one understands this, I can't... Well, I'll just skip over that one because I don't know how to translate it. I can't read it. It's all goofed up and I can't read it. So, we'll move on to the next one, ladies and gentlemen. By Rush Limbaugh imitation. Allison does the best. John Stormer, and None Dare Call It Treason. Florissant, Missouri, Liberty Bell Press, 1964, page 9. Wait a minute. I think we already did that. Am I finished with all of this? I think I am. Yes? 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 No. Okay, here we go. Congress of the Nation, A Review of Government and Politics in the Post-War Years, Congressional Quarterly Service, Washington, D.C., 1965, page 256. Unification of the Army, Navy, and Air Force under a single chief of staff advanced repeatedly after 1945 as the avenue to a stronger and more efficient military establishment. Never won the support of Congress. Direction and control of the armed services became increasingly centralized. I guess maybe we did read that. Read that. Okay. Arthur M. Schlesinger in A Thousand Days, Boston, Houghton Mifflin, 1965, page 78, quote, "The New York financial and legal community, that arsenal of talent which had so long furnished a steady supply to Democratic as well as Republican administrations. This community was the heart of the American establishment." Yeah, we read that one also. Well, I get a double page here. Here's one. Richard N. Gardner, written in Foreign Affairs, April 1974. Quote, "In short, the house of the world order will have to be built from the bottom up rather than from the top down. An end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned assault." End quote. Gardner was a Rhodes Scholar and was appointed a United States ambassador to Spain by fellow Rhodes Scholar Bill Clinton. Henry Steele Commager, writes in a Declaration of Interdependence, Philadelphia, World Affairs Council, 1975, quote, "Written by Council on Foreign Relations member Henry Steele Commager, it was meant to replace the Declaration of Independence in time for its 200th birthday at a ceremony in Philadelphia in 1976. The Declaration includes the following, that quote, 2 centuries ago, our forefathers brought forth a new nation. Now we must join with others to bring forth a new world order, to establish a new world order of compassion, peace, justice, and security. It is essential that mankind free itself from the limitations of national prejudice and acknowledge that all people are part of one global community. We call upon all nations to strengthen and to sustain the United Nations and its specialized agencies and other institutions of world order." End quote. James Perloff wrote in The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations and the American Decline, Appleton, Wisconsin, Western Islands, 1988, pages 9 and 10, quote, "Admiral Chester Ward, former Judge Advocate General of the United States Navy and former Council on Foreign Relations member, in 1975 wrote that the goal of the Council on Foreign Relations was, quote, submergence of United States sovereignty and national independence into an all-powerful one-world government. Once the ruling members of the Council on Foreign Relations have decided that the United States government should adopt a particular policy, the very substantial research facilities of the Council on Foreign Relations are put to work to develop arguments, intellectual and emotional, to support the new policy and to confound and discredit intellectually and politically any opposition." End quote. Henry Kissinger said this in the Seattle Post-Intelligence on April 18, 1975, page A2, quote, "Our nation is uniquely endowed to play a creative and decisive role in the new order which which is taking form around us, end quote. And Phyllis Schlafly and Chester Ward, Rear Admiral, United States Navy, retired, in Kissinger on the Couch, New Rochelle, New York, Arlington House, 1975, pages 146 and also 149 through 50. Quote, purpose of promoting disarmament and submergence of United States sovereignty and national independence into an all-powerful one-world government is composed of the one-world global governmental ideologists, more respectfully referred to as the organized internationalists. They are the ones who carry on the tradition of the founders. This lust to surrender the sovereignty and independence of the United States is pervasive throughout most of the membership. The majority visualize the utopian submergence of the United States as a subsidiary administrative unit of a global government. Saul H. Mendlovitz, in the introduction, Saul H. Mendlovitz, editor, in the book On the Creation of a Just World Order, Preferred Worlds for the 1990s, New York, The Free Press, 1975, page 16, said this, and I quote, there is no longer a question of whether or not there will be world government by the year 2000. As I see it, the questions we should be addressing to ourselves are how it will come into being by cataclysm, drift, more or less rational design, and whether it will be totalitarian, benignly elitist, or participatory, the probabilities being in that order. End quote. Notice the date, ladies and gentlemen, is the exact date I've been telling you for years. The year 2000 is their goal. Jimmy Carter, in 1976, in his acceptance speech for the Democratic nomination, said this, and I quote, a political and economic elite who have shaped decisions and never had to account for mistakes nor to suffer from injustice. When unemployment prevails, they never stand in line looking for a job. When deprivation results from a confused welfare system, they never do without food or clothing or a place to sleep. When the public schools are inferior or torn by strife, their children go to exclusive private schools. And when the bureaucracy is bloated and confused, the powerful always manage to discover and occupy niches of special influence and privilege, end quote. And Jimmy Carter should know it is exactly the way he has always lived his life. It is the way he is living his life right now. And the people he was talking to thought he was talking about someone else. Public Law 94-412, 94th Congress, September 14, 1976, page 1257, quote, Section 301, when the President declares a national emergency, no powers or authorities made available by statute for us in the event of an emergency shall be exercised unless and until the President specifies the provisions of law under which he proposes that he or other officials will act. Such specification may be made either in the declaration of a national emergency or by one or more contemporaneous or subsequent executive orders published in the Federal Register and transmitted to the Congress, end quote. And I better mark this so that I can continue tomorrow right there. Okay. And that is exactly what we are going to do. Continue it tomorrow. And I have no idea what's in this CD drawer anymore. It is totally confusing to me. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, now I know. Okay, folks. Good night. Think about what you've heard tonight. Think about what you've heard tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and hope that I can get a handle on this CD player by tomorrow night. Say a little prayer to that extent. Thank you very much. Good night, and God bless you all. there's something wrong with this thing. Again, it will not advance. It won't do anything. It has totally frozen up on this particular disc. Well, Annie, it looks like we're going to have to get the new CD player out. We go through these things like popcorn, folks. And looks like we're going to have to get the new one that we just bought not too long ago because this one will not even work. Not even work. Try this. Well, that's as good as any. I give up. I just flat give up on that. We'll see how this does. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.